In customary fashion, I have in my hands a $100 bill prize. Is Rick here?
I'm here, Paul.
Do you have all of the names before you?
We have all the names.
Okay. So, traditionally we offer these big prizes at the beginning so that people can get here on time. So, at the next convention, just remember that all of you were warned. So, who do we have? Oriana, you draw a prize. Draw a name. Yeah.
So if it's me, it's Skin Valley.
This is a prize that was given by a member who wants to remain anonymous. But it's a member from the Canadian Federation of the Blind.
And the winner is Larry Sharsmith.
Oh, my God, Larry! Come here, Larry. Come here, Larry.
My name is Larry.
I think you have two Larrys.
Oh.
So, welcome everybody. Of course, welcome CFB members and welcome to visitors to our convention. We are absolutely honored to have you. And we would also be very honored to have you at the banquet tonight. This convention is a celebration. It's a big, big party, and we'd like to have as many people as possible just to participate in the festivities. My name is Dr. Paul Gabbias. I was the founding president of the National Federation of the Blind Advocates for Equality and the founder of the Canadian Federation of the Blind, although not its president. And I have some announcements first that our president, Elizabeth Lalonde, wanted me to make. The first one relates to the bathroom. The bathroom is, when you come out of this room, turn right, and it's at the end of the hall. The second announcement is relating to special meal requirements at the banquet. If you have some special meal requirements, please let Madam President who know, Ellen Gabbias, to come up and just say a few words.
Thank you.
Families are wonderful things, and this is my Federation family. This is the organization we dreamed of when we began working in Canada in 1990. And I am so honored to be a part of this momentous change and the beginning of the continuation of Federationism in Canada. Anyone who knows me for 30 seconds or longer knows that I'm the mother of four children. And I can't think of a better atmosphere in which to raise children than a Federation atmosphere. You are all part of my family and have been and continue to be an important part of the Gapyes family life. Blind people in Canada have a lot of work to do, and we're going to be talking about that work, but we also have spirit and joy and pride in ourselves, and there is no question that we will do what it takes to change, truly change, what it means to be blind in this country.
Now I'd like to invite up for a few words the first president of the Canadian Federation of the Blind, Oriana Belusic, and the first lady, Doris Belusic.
Thank you, Dr. Gapyes. Fellow Federationist guests and all, that includes our four-legged friends that are in the audience here. Thank you very much. Organizing the blind in Canada is quite a challenge. And I don't say that lightly, because I think things that are really, really worthwhile require a lot of work and a lot of commitment by some very talented and gifted people. And I believe that we have those in this federation. So I wish everybody the best. And I'm really quite excited about the convention, so I'm really looking forward to the rest of the day. Everybody enjoy. Thank you.
And now, of course, we have an honored member of the Federation here, member of the board member of the National Federation of the Blind, the representative of our President of the National Federation of the Blind, Dr. Mark Maurer. His representative is Carla McQuillan. Carla McQuillan is the President of the National Federation of the Blind of Oregon, and she's also, as I said, a board member of the National Federation of the Blind. We are all members of the National Federation of the Blind and the Canadian Federation of the Blind, so we really are part of a big family that started in 1940, and I just wanted to ask Carla to address us with a few words. We'll be hearing a lot from Carla today, but just we want to signal how absolutely honored we are to have you here representing President Maurer.
Thank you very much, Paul. And what I would say is that I'm not the honored member of the organization here today. Each and every one of you are. You are at the beginning of taking this organization forward, and it is really an honor for me to be here with all of you and to have seen the crowd last night. And I'm looking forward to the rest of the day, and I hope that it will be productive and that you'll take away a spirit that will stay with you and keep you going throughout the year until you come to meet again next year for the next convention. Thank you very much for allowing me to be a part of this.
And of course, now we, I would like, first of all, Liz Rotenberger. We have, of course, our president's parents here, Liz and Hans Rotenberger. And of course, Hans is doing the video taping, so we know you're here. And we just want to acknowledge your presence here, Hans. So can we give Hans a hand? Door prize.
Yeah.
All right, somebody asked for a door prize.
What's the prize?
Who's going to do the draw?
We don't know what the prize is yet.
Get her.
I'll do it.
Did she win?
Good choice.
That Braille business paid off.
No, no.
What was it that she won? We're getting it?
We have a CD here, donated by AEBC, and it says bright. It's in Japanese, so I can't read it. It says Braiko Nakatsukasa.
Yeah. Braiko Nakatsukasa.
Oh, thank you very much.
Classical pianist.
Oh. Thank you very, very much. Now, before I invite the president and our first gentleman.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
What do we call him, right? Our first gentleman of the Canadian Federation of the Blind. Before we invite them up, I would like to invite... of course, Elizabeth's mom up here. I have a favor to ask her, so, but I'll ask you when you come.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Dad, I'll do my part.
I'll just say, you of course you have, you can say what you like, but, there are some flowers here on the table, and they're for somebody. But I'd like you to describe these flowers to the audience before we continue with the proceedings.
And I also want to say how wonderful it is to be here, and all the work that's been done is just a tremendous experience. Thank you all. And the flowers, they're gladiolus, pink gladiolus. And there's a, I think it's a star flower. It's yellow. And I'm not sure of the purple ones, but they're tall and they look like bells. Surrounded by a bit of fern, green fern, and a little bit of orange interspersed between them, and they are like little tiny bells also. So it's a beautiful bouquet.
Wow. Pretty. Wow.
And if I could call the president of the Canadian Federation of the Blind and Elizabeth Lalonde and her husband Jeff Lalonde up to the podium. We have a little ceremony for you.
Oh, goodness. My goodness, lots of surprises.
Lots of surprises. So, just a minute here.
Okay.
And if you would just stand here during.
Oh, wow.
your for the wonderful work that you've done as president, from your CFB friends and supporters.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. They're just incredible, and they're I need a weightlifting session.
Wow.
So maybe before we give the floor to the president, Sweetie Jeff, if you would say a few words, and then we'll continue.
Well, it's great to be here, and I'm really proud of all of you for what you've done, and there's lots of work to do, and I'm behind all of you, all of CFB. Thank you.
Yeah, that means a lot, because for Jeff to get up here and say that on a microphone means an awful lot. And I want to thank Jeff and my family for all the support the past few weeks, because I've had no time for my family at all, and they've been behind me all the way. So, what are you looking for? Oh, are you? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm taking over.
Forgot that I was supposed to do that. Oh yes, okay. Well, our president's speech is putting it into context. What is the Canadian Federation of the Blind? Why are we here? And what do we want for blind Canadians? Our president, Elizabeth Lalonde.
Thank you, Paul. Well, I'm overwhelmed already, and I haven't even started talking. So what a way to start off the morning. Thank you, everybody, for being here and for sharing in this special day with us. Now, I have to let you know, this will be part of my speech a little bit later this morning, but because I'm not fast at Braille yet, I'm reading this speech sort of in an experimental way. I have it all in my little type and speak here. I'm going to be trying to repeat it as I hear it. So please bear with me as I go. It's a bit of an experiment. So welcome to all of you. Thank you for coming and sharing in this exciting day. And it is an exciting day for blind people, because we are here not to listen to others speak about us or on our behalf, not to hear expert opinion about blindness, but instead to join together as colleagues, mentors, and friends to speak for ourselves, to talk about blindness from our own perspective, and to participate in planning our own futures. As many of you know, I am president of the Canadian Federation of the Blind, the CFB. And many of you know the CFB is modeled after the National Federation of the Blind, the NFB in the United States. But now I will explain in more detail what the CFB is and what the NFB is, what we do and what we stand for. One of our goals in organizing this convention was to demystify the Federation and to help people understand our perspective on blindness. Some of you may know about the Federation. Like most blind Canadians, if you have heard of the NFB at all, you've probably heard rumors, innuendo, and partial truths. Well, we are here today to peel off the layers of mystery from the Federation and help people clearly understand our reality. Anything new and different often promotes a reaction of fear in people. And in Canada, the Canadian Federation of the Blind is new and different. I will tell you about the first time I encountered the Federation and what went through my mind. Thanks to the hard work and fundraising efforts of Dr. Paul Gabias and Mary Ellen Gabias, I was one of the fortunate people who went to New Orleans back in 1997 to the NFB convention. A group of us went for free on this incredible adventure, but
but I don't think of us, I don't think any of us at the time knew what we were getting into and how lucky we were to have this opportunity. All I knew was we were going to some blind person conference in the South, maybe about 200 people or so, and I couldn't wait to see Bourbon Street and have a relaxing vacation. Well, I was right about a few things. I was going to the South, and there were blind people there, and I did see Bourbon Street briefly. However, once I got there, I didn't have time to relax. And the 200 blind people I had expected became, in reality, 20 times that number. Boy, had I underestimated the size and the scope of the NFB. As I sat in the room, in a room the size of a large banquet hall, and listened to the sound of 3,000 people, mostly blind people, talking all around me, and heard the tapping of white canes everywhere, and felt the energy of so many people gathered together in one place, blind people taking charge of their lives and feeling good about themselves, I was in awe. Actually, I was overwhelmed. I had never heard of the National Federation of the Blind before until this convention. How could such a large and influential and positive organization exist on the same continent for over 50 years without my knowledge? I came home exhausted, confused, and motivated, and immediately started researching the NFB. And I haven't stopped since. All my life and energy had lived in me a positive view of my own blindness and my abilities, a feeling of pride lurking inside me. But I never found a clear way to express this feeling until I found the NFB. Finally, I had discovered a group of people who were blind and who didn't think blindness was a big deal. A group of people who used their canes unashamedly and who made blindness seem ordinary and acceptable and, best of all, respectable. Finally, I had found my place. Well, after that New Orleans convention, I joined the National Federation of the Blind Advocates for Equality, NFBAE, which at that time was the Canadian version of the NFB. Paul and Dr. Paul and Mary Ellen Gavias worked hard to start the NFBAE and to bring federationism to Canada. But despite all their efforts, the time had not yet come. I worked in the NFBAE for a couple of years until it became evident that the organization was no longer following the federation approach and philosophy. And so in 1998, a group of us separated to form our own organization, the Canadian Federation of the Blind. Oriana Belusic got the CFB on its feet and provided strong leadership through the development and startup phase. Without Oriana's help, I don't know what we would have done. After a few years, Oriana decided he wanted to focus on some other things. So I was elected president in 2003. What a shock. I had no idea I would leave the AGM that day as president. It was one of the best things that ever happened to me. I love the job and grow with it every day. Well, what is the Canadian Federation of the Blind, and what do we stand for? We are a grassroots, nonprofit organization of blind people committed to the equality and empowerment of blind Canadians. We are the organized blind in Canada. As I mentioned, we are modeled after the NFB in the States, and we borrow NFB philosophy and structure to fit into a Canadian context. We believe in a few central philosophies and base our activities around these beliefs. You may ask, what is all this talk about philosophy? What does it mean? It is simple. Unlike other organizations of and for the blind, CFB members have more than just blindness in common. Our members also believe in some basic ideas about blindness and the opportunities and achievements of blind people. These include, 1, We are not an organization speaking on behalf of blind people. Rather, we are an organization of blind people speaking for ourselves. Unlike the CNIB, which tends to treat blind people like wards or minors, we are a movement of the organized blind. We do not speak for blind people. We are blind people who make our own decisions, decide what is best for us, and plan our own futures. The key word is of. We are an organization of the blind, not for the blind. Two, we feel that with training and opportunity, blind people can compete on terms of equality with our sighted peers. We believe as blind people, we can do almost anything if we have the will to and if we have the proper training and opportunity to do so. You will hear more later about training and the NFB approach to rehabilitation for the blind. Three, we believe blindness is not a handicap but a characteristic. Many groups and agencies for the blind, such as CNIB, are based on the medical model of blindness, which views blindness as a severe medical problem. Instead, we feel blindness does not have to be a severe problem. And with some good training and a good attitude, blind people can achieve great things. Of course, this is not to say that being blind isn't hard sometimes. We all have days when we wish things could be easier. But in general, we believe that blindness does not have to be a tragedy. I want to emphasize the point about with training and opportunity, blindness does not have to be a tragedy. Training and opportunity are vital. Without these, blindness can be very difficult. Four, the real problem of blindness is not the lack of sight, but the lack of positive information about blindness and the achievements of blind people. We feel the real difficulty is not the blindness itself, but the misconceptions and misunderstandings in the public about what we are capable of doing. Five, it is respectable to be blind. This is my favorite. It cuts to the root of everything. It means that feelings like shame, embarrassment, inferiority, unworthiness, all these negative emotions that we have all felt at one time or another about being blind, live no longer. Not once you truly, deep down, in your heart, mind, and soul, feel it is respectable to be blind. Well, this is what we believe. Now I will talk about what we do. The three main categories of activities we have in the CFB are public education, mentoring, and advocacy. With public education, we feel it is important to educate the public about the abilities of blind people. This then makes it easier for us when we try to get a job, go to school, or participate in community life. If employers, teachers, and other members of the public know about our abilities, they are more likely to hire us and accept us as full participating members of society. Some examples of our public education efforts are our CFB website and our brochures and our magazine, The Blind Canadian. We now have two volumes of The Blind Canadian filled with articles, essays, and stories about the Federation and about blind people living productive and happy lives. We also make public appearances and host info tables to talk and teach about blindness and the Federation. One exciting project we're pursuing this year is our Braille is Beautiful program. The program introduces elementary school children to Braille as a fun and interesting method of reading and writing. With help from the Times Colonist grant that we received and from the NFB National Materials Center, we are taking the Braille is Beautiful curriculum to District 61 schools to talk about the importance of Braille's literacy, to provide interactive activities for the children in Braille, and to talk about the abilities of blind people. Another activity we do in the CFB is mentoring. We meet together at informal gatherings, at meetings, and at conventions to learn from one another to gain confidence, and to further the cause of Federationism. Members also work with each other to learn blindness skills, cane technique, braille, technology, and life skills. We are all equal. Some of us may have more knowledge and experience in some areas, and so we work with others who may have less knowledge experience in those areas. It is a reciprocal and rewarding network of relationships. In this way, people learn the necessary skills of blindness, and they learn these skills from blind people who are using these skills every day. In the CFB, we are truly the blind leading the blind. Our third main activity is advocacy. Whenever necessary, we lobby government, go to the media and other organizations to protect the rights of blind people and to make sure blind people are treated respectfully and fairly. Whether we write a letter to the local TV station regarding a negative portrayal of blind people in the media, or visit the local MLA office to express our concerns about cuts to audiobooks, or campaign to get a blindness service provided by government instead of an unaccountable blindness agency, we do what is necessary. Well, this gives you some idea of what the CFB is and what we stand for. In closing, I want to tell you about my second NFB convention this July in Louisville, Kentucky. Unlike the New Orleans convention, this time I was prepared. My mom, my son, Reese, and I spent a whole day traveling on 3 planes to get there. And boy, was it worth it. NFB conventions are like nothing else. They include workshops and seminars on a range of blindness issues, from technology to occupations to education to advocacy. There are meetings for blind lawyers, blind students, blind medical workers, blind entrepreneurs, and parents of blind children. There are dances, exhibits, and a camp for children, both blind and sighted. And there is a general session with speakers who make you think, who make you cry, who make you laugh, who make you say to yourself, it's really okay to be blind. I came back from Kentucky bringing with ideas for blind Canadians and the CFB. So many ideas I could hardly contain myself. This weekend's convention is a start, and we have put together a day of speakers who will talk about the Federation and its philosophies, perspectives, and approaches to training and rehabilitation, and the education of blind children. I hope it will give you a flavor for what we do and why it is so important that we are here. And I hope it will show you that there are other options and other ways for thinking about and dealing with blindness. Since coming back from Kentucky, I feel even stronger about the importance of bringing the spirit of Federation to Canada. The spirit of confidence, the spirit of group solidarity, the spirit of full participation in society and in life for blind people. We must bring Federationism to Canada, because we owe it to ourselves and to other blind Canadians, and because we cannot afford to do otherwise. I am here to say that Federationism in Canada is no longer a dream or a far-off goal. It is a challenge, it is a reality, and it is here to stay. Thank you.
Madam President. Our President mentioned her first convention in New Orleans, where there were over 90 Canadians. There is a person who also is here in this room who was very helpful in helping that to happen, and that is the original treasurer of the National Federation of the Blind Advocates for Equality. His name is David Brunn. And I wanted to ask David to come to address us with a few words. He's coming.
Wow.
There you are, sir.
Great. Thank you, Paul. I want to thank Elizabeth and the Canadian Federation of the Blind for giving this opportunity to come up here. Elizabeth, great speech. That was very heartfelt and brought back a lot of memories. With myself, I met Paul back in 1995 when he was looking for individuals to attend the Chicago NFB convention, and it was definitely a turning point in my life. I appreciate the opportunities it's given to me. I've drawn numerous times on what I've learned over the years with the NFB. It's seen me through some very difficult times, both personal and my work life. And it's definitely assisted me to succeed. And I appreciate it, and I hope all of you get to enjoy the same experience that I've had over the years. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Mr. Chairman, I think we need a door
card. Oh, I forget. Absolutely. If you guys don't push me, I'll just forget. You guys got a jockey for position here. This is my wife and the Vice President of the Canadian Federation of the Blind, Mary Ellen Gabbias. And she's going to, her address is called Being an Informed Rehabilitation Customer, Making Wise Choices for Your Life. So she's here. So here you have Mary Ellen Gabbias.
It has been wisely said that philosophy bakes no bread. It's been said, however, with equal wisdom, that without a philosophy, no bread is baked. There are two competing philosophies of blindness, and I will summarize them for you. The first one, the one that we've heard before, and is: blindness is a dying. When, in the full current of his life, blindness comes upon a man, it is a death of that sighted life. This philosophy is one philosophy. The other is: blind people are normal people. With training and opportunity, blindness can be reduced to the level of a physical nuisance. It is respectable to be blind. Elizabeth described that philosophy in eloquent detail, and I thank her for that. The first notion I mentioned was quoted, was developed by Father Thomas Carroll, a chaplain for blinded war veterans. In his book, Blindness, What It Is and What It Does and How to Live With It, I think is that's its kind of title, he described 20 lacks and losses which were part of blindness. They included things like the inability, the lack of freedom of movement, the lack of literacy, and which are followed by other things like the lack of sexual attractiveness. As you can imagine, Father Carroll's philosophy is far different from the philosophy we espouse in the Federation. His language, of course, is certainly not politically correct. He never says what happens when blindness comes upon a woman. Presumably, she's dead meat, too, but her demise isn't worth mentioning. And what about children who are born blind? Maybe they're, well, he doesn't say, but certainly the inferences are dismal. Now, most people would reject out of hand Father Carroll's philosophy of blindness these days. At least that's how it seems. They wouldn't say what he says. Everyone says that it is respectable to be blind. But there are some people who act, who may say it, but they act as though they don't believe it. What I'd like to do is to talk about ways to know when you are dealing with someone who wants to teach you about blindness, whether what they're saying is the way to go, somewhere in sort of the mushy middle, or whether it's a corpse concept, the dying, the corpse concept. If you're talking to someone and they talk to you about the stages of adjusting to blindness and they start mentioning things like denial, anger, bargaining, grief, and acceptance, remember something. That came from a book by someone named Elizabeth Kubler-Ross on death and dying. And their notion is that you're having to deal with a tremendous loss in your life. So beware if you get that kind of discussion about emotional adjustment to blindness, that you're dealing with the corpse concept. Now, there are several ways of approaching training of blind people. In the Federation, we believe that there are four components that must be there if a training program is to accomplish its purposes. There's training in the skills of blindness. Do you learn Braille, cane travel, home management, woodshop, other things, that the skills that will make it possible for you to live a full life? Do you have a personal attitude of uplifting, positive, I can do it? Do you learn to deal with and help to change society's attitudes of blindness? And do you learn the kind of personal skills and attitudes that will help you blend into the larger society? By blending in, by the way, I don't mean trying to pass for sighted. I mean things like punctuality, accountability for your work, high personal expectations, willingness and desire to be of service to the broader community. Carla McQuillan will be talking later about what happens at an NFB training center and NFB training programs. But we believe that unless you deal with all four of those issues, the training is fragmented and not valuable. Now, other people, a lot of training programs deal with blindness almost in isolation. It is a matter of personally overcoming a disability. We don't believe that. We believe that it is a matter of changing your own attitudes about blindness because you are part of the society, and like it or not, to some degree or another, we all adopt limiting beliefs about ourselves. So if you don't deal with how the society around you deals with blindness, nobody can ever get too far ahead of their society. Someone who believed in the possibility of flying before the time of the Wright brothers was thought of as kind of a nut. Now people who believe in flying are, you know, anyone who doesn't believe in flying is thought of as kind of a nut. So our goal they might be afraid of flying themselves, but they certainly believe in its possibility. We are changing notions about blindness from the world is flat to the world is round. And the change is happening. Society wants to believe it, wants to accept us. but we've got a ways to go. And any training that doesn't focus on the need for that societal training is inferior and very possibly destructive. When training happens, what actually goes on at a training center? Well, people who truly believe blindness is respectable aren't afraid to use the word with pride. I am a blind person. I would be a blind person. I have no vision at all. If I had 20/200 vision, I would not refer to myself as legally blind or visually impaired or partially sighted. I am a blind person. For explanations, I might say that I'm a blind person with some remaining vision. I might, if I was going to say I was partially anything, I would say I was partially blind rather than partially sighted. Although I must say that the term that someone is a partial, which I've heard some people use, makes me wonder if they're a partial what? I, for one, don't want to be a partial person. I want the whole meal deal. I'm total. And I don't mean that in terms of my blindness, my level of my visual acuity, but I'm a total person with all the strengths and weaknesses that that involves, and blindness is just one of those strengths and weaknesses. There's a, you know, it is sometimes necessary in the beginning, dealing with someone who is first losing vision, to talk to them gently about what that means and not to insist that they use the word blind at the beginning. But if someone is going to truly succeed, it is important to embrace the word blindness and not to hide from it or try to minimize it. Then there's the question of carrying a cane. If you are blind, that means that you don't have sufficient vision to deal with the world in the way that a sighted person does, or to do it efficiently. That means that chances are very strong that if you travel around without a cane, you're putting yourself at a great disadvantage. Many people avoid the cane because they find it embarrassing, and they don't want people to know that they're blind. And we believe very strongly that in the course of training, a cane, a long cane, not a folding one, should be used and used at all times in evidence in all situations. We also, there's the question of the use of blindfolds or sleep shades. If the training program says to you, our job is to help you maximize your residual vision, don't walk, run in the other direction. I believe in optimizing remaining vision, but that is not the same as maximizing it. The best way to optimize remaining vision is to learn to function without it, and then to, after you've gotten the skills of blindness down to reflex perfection, add back vision. Use it as a plus, as an extra, rather than relying on a sense. If your vision was adequate to be relied upon, why would you be visiting a program for the blind at all? As far as the use of blind sleep shades, I do believe in it for blind students. I also believe that staff members who work in programs for the blind need to be trained under sleep shades. They need to know at the gut level not only that blind people can do what they need to do, but that they can. I would recommend that any staff member who wants to work professionally with blind people spend 3 months under blindfold learning to be blind themselves. There's nothing like personal experience to convince you of the rightness of a point of view. With respect to programs like Disabled Student Services Offices or Access Centers or whatever the names of those programs are these days, there is, I think, a role for them. But I think that in deciding what services you as a blind student get from those, you need to be very, very careful. Let's take the use of readers in colleges. There are three ways that the Student Services Office can interact. The first and most positive way is to help blind students learn how to find readers, where to look for them, what to say to recruit them, how to train them, set hours, and control whatever reader budget they might have themselves. That is a skill that will stand you in good stead for the rest of your life, because when you're living in the world, nobody else is going to handle that service for you. The middle road would be for the Disabled Student Services Office to act as a collection place for names of people who wanted to work as readers. Let them leave their name with the Student Services Office, give blind students a list of names, and let the blind person handle it from there, handle the recruiting, training, and supervision of the readers. Unfortunately, in some places, and I don't know how it is here or anywhere, you know, I don't know how it is here, but some programs train readers, find them, hire them, and control the interaction. I think that is destructive and bad training, and I recommend strongly to any blind student that they get the learn the skills of handling that for themselves, because otherwise they will leave college or university unprepared to cope with the demands of a world that doesn't have an office set up to accommodate them. With respect to interaction with professors, mostly the Disabled Student Services Office should stay out of it. Let the blind person deal with professors, and perhaps be there only in cases of emergencies where the professor and the student can't work out a working relationship, you know, where there's conflict that the two individuals working together cannot resolve. Basic training in disability rights is a kind of a middle ground. It can be good, it can be bad, depending on how the training is done. But when the professor has to deal first with the Disabled Student Services Office and does not have the flexibility to deal personally with the student, and the student doesn't have the flexibility to deal personally with the professor, that's a warping of the education relationship, and says to everybody concerned that the blind person really isn't an adult capable of handling his or her own affairs. Those are some of the choices that people can make in services. Frankly, blind Canadians don't have the choices we need. We don't have a choice between programs. We have what there is at the moment, and the Canadian Federation of the Blind is committed to making a full pledged rehabilitation option available to blind people. But in the interim, we can do some things to get maximum benefit out of the limited opportunities and choices we have. We can insist when we are being offered training that we do it under sleep shades. We can work together through our mentoring program to make sure that we have contact with one another. We can attend NFB conventions and unashamedly pick the brains of people there who have had training and who are familiar with the Federation concept. When we are being taught cane travel, we can insist that we not be taught routes, that we'd be taught the concept and way, the structured discovery method of travel, the way that says, this is a situation, how do you find your way out of it? Ideally, it is good rehabilitation practice to teach blind people in groups and let them each go off on their own lessons and let the teacher observe from time to time. It's bad rehabilitation for the teacher always to be there so that the student knows, even though the teacher says or does nothing, that if they get into real trouble, someone will come and rescue them. It is bad practice to teach someone, this is the way to get from point A to point B. And then next week, here is the way to get from point B to point C. But I'll come back again if you want to learn to get from A to B without, or A to C without going to B first. That's not good practice. You know that you've been given good training. If you can be dropped off in the middle of a strange city and get where you need to go with a minimum amount of trepidation and fear. It's bad training if you've had bad training if when you move to a new place you feel that you need to call the cane travel instructor out to show you how to get around in the new city. That's how you know whether your training is good or not. Do you outgrow the need for the training professionals? The relationship between an agency for the blind and its customers is not like the relationship between a doctor and his patients or her patients, because the doctor is always the professional, the patient is always the patient. It's much more like the relationship between the faculty of law and law students. In the faculty of law, in law schools, it's the students who do much of the writing for the professional journals. And very quickly, the students become the colleagues of the professors, and they begin working collaboratively together. That is the purpose of rehabilitation, not to have people be permanent clients of the experts, but to become colleagues in a mutual effort to change things and to make things better. As you look at your options for training, it's okay to say, I want more. It's okay to say, I'm not happy with what I'm getting, and I will go up the ladder as far as I need to go to get the training that I need. And it is certainly okay, and in fact, it's essential, to work with knowledgeable blind people like the people in the Canadian Federation of the Blind to say, what is a reasonable rehabilitation goal for me? What is a program that I can aspire to? Learning to be blind never ends. It's an ongoing process, and although most days you don't even think about it very much after a while, it's always nice to find some way to challenge yourself and to push the limits of what you believe is possible in your life. That's true for everyone. Why shouldn't it be true for us as blind people as well? And the society doesn't necessarily encourage us to push our limits. That is something that we, in a loving and supportive way, can do for one another. And I think that is the service that we can offer. One more thing before I turn the rest of my time back to our president and MC.
Excuse me, please, Mary Ellen.
Yes.
I hate to do that. I just have to switch over the tape so I can continue recording.
That's